south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Okay, back in the saddle again. Oh, and a little announcement here. This is Friday's show. It's going out on Friday, December 31st, 2022, and Sunday's show, which would be January 2nd. Well, there won't be one Sunday, January 2nd, because I'm traveling and doing the New Year's thing, you know. So the next show after this will be a best of or worst of the Expat Files, depending on how the main engineer Jesse at PRN fills in the time slot. His call. Oh, and for all you wondering about this chaotic COVIDian news coming out about the Omicron variant and all that crap, isn't it funny? It's hitting lots and lots of people, most all of them, vaxxed. And it seems almost no one's dying. In fact, I heard last count for last month, 9 people dead. Yet the big government, the big pharma machine is stirring up panic again. Get that booster, get a third shot. I like what expat Eddie says. He says, Fauci needs a shot. He needs a shot gun up his ass. Hey, I'd pay to see that. Get this. Both my 40-something sister and my 90-year-old mother, they live in the same house, came down with a COVIDiot strain just 2 weeks ago. Both of them double vaxxed with a booster. Yeah, right. The vax is supposed to protect you. Well, I'd like to see what Johnson and Pfizer and those other big pharma assholes are going to do when they're in court. What kind of defense are they going to use when they're accused of the biggest medical fraud in history? So then what happened, especially with my 90-year-old mother? Well, as soon as she called me and started reporting early symptoms, I put her on 18 milligrams of ivermectin a day and 200 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine for a 5-day run. And guess what? By the third day, they were out of the woods feeling so much better. And by the fifth day, the symptoms practically gone. Now, of course, up in the States, it's quite difficult to get hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So where do you think they got it? Well, my brother, who met me down here in Latin America to get some stem cell treatments, you heard me tell that story in the last few shows. I took him to a local drugstore where he bought a box of 100 6-milligram ivermectin pills, along with a box of 30 200-milligram hydroxychloroquine pills. That's enough to treat 6 complete COVIDiot cases, and it set him back around $60. Are you getting this? That means you could treat a complete COVID case. A 5-day treatment, that's all it takes, for about $12. Oh, and if you still believe big pharma-controlled idiots like Dr. Fauci and NIH, National Institutes of Health, and WHO, when they say ivermectin's ineffective, even dangerous treatment, well, just look it up. You'll find it's one of the safest drugs that's ever been used. It's been given out more than 3 billion times. If you believe the lies that it's dangerous or doesn't work, then for sure you haven't heard about this report that just came out of Brazil. And it's not anecdotal. It's a huge study. Listen to this. Because for sure, Facebook, Twaddle, and Google have censored this to the point that very few people, that is people who watch the lame street news, will ever hear or read about it. So here it goes. The article starts, early in the pandemic, before vaccines were available in Brazil, the southern Brazilian city of Itajaí offered ivermectin as a prophylactic agent against the disease. So between July and December of 2020, 133,051 people were offered a low dose of ivermectin just 2 times a week. Not 2 times a day, 2 times a week. They used 18 milligrams of ivermectin for each dose. By the way, that 18 milligram ivermectin dose is the same dose I told my mother and sister to take daily for 5 days, and now they're out of the woods completely. Of course, in the case of just 2 people in my family, that's anecdotal. But that Brazilian study is absolutely not anecdotal. Not with 133,051 people being monitored in the test group. So how did it turn out? Well, after analyzing the test data, a team of researchers spanning several Brazilian institutes and the University of Toronto in Canada and Colombia's EAFIT Institute concluded just this month, December 2022, that the hospitalization and mortality rates were cut in half with the ivermectin group as compared to others who did not get it. The article states it's even more impressive when you learn that the users of ivermectin were much older than average. That means they were in a much higher risk group. By the way, I talk to Latin American doctors every chance I get, and lately I've been able to talk to quite a few of them since I've been accompanying my brother through various appointments for his stem cell treatments. And I found out that many, many doctors who, of course, are being exposed to COVID every day, they go to clinics and hospitals filled with sick COVID people, right? Well, guess what a huge number of these doctors have been doing on their own without telling too many others? They've been taking prophylactically between 6 and 18 milligrams of ivermectin just once a week. Now, why would they do that? Well, that's because lots of them know about the studies in Africa and the one just mentioned in Brazil, along with many other studies, but mostly the African ones. No, not South Africa. That's a different case completely. But the rest of Africa, where they expected a huge explosion in COVID cases, but it just didn't happen. It just goes against all odds. Talking about people, many who are malnourished, poor, living on the edge, drinking unpurified water, unmasked, and living in unhygienic conditions in very close quarters, especially in the big cities. Not to mention the underfunded and understaffed, totally medieval public hospitals and clinics that are few and far in between. The perfect storm for a massive COVIDiot outbreak, or so medical analysts predicted. But it just didn't happen. And when COVIDiot cases did break out, they were mild and treatable almost exclusively at home. In other words, few COVIDiot cases ever got bad enough to end up in the hospital. So how can that be explained? Well, doctors here in Latin America will tell you. The same reason ivermectin's available over the counter here in Latin American drugstores. Because in hot tropical climates, there are lots of insects and parasites, and ivermectin is taken routinely, though not every day, sometimes only once a month, or even once every 6 months. Imagine that, just one dose a month, or every 2 or 6 months, is effective. It's enough to ward off parasites and terrible diseases like river blindness. Yep, you heard that right. Medical researchers on the ground in Africa are saying just that one dose a month of ivermectin seems to be responsible for that amazing downtick in projected and expected COVIDiot cases in Africa. But have you heard that mentioned in lamestream news? No way, because it conflicts with their get vaxxed agenda. So I repeat, tons of doctors here in Latin America are taking one tiny dose of ivermectin a week to protect themselves and ward off COVIDiot, since they're mingling with COVIDiot patients all the time in clinics and hospitals. Oh, and one doctor, a Cuban doctor, told me it's probably only necessary to take one small dose a month to get that protection, since that's how it's turned out in Africa with millions in that test population. But it's so cheap and innocuous. Why not take a small dose once a week, just to be sure? It'll only set you back less than a buck. Oh, I forgot. You guys up in Cleveland, New York, San Francisco, Montreal, you can't get that stuff, can you? Or if you can, it's with great difficulty, right? Oh, well, I know the drill. If you ask your doctor to prescribe it, most of them are scared little cowards. They don't want to get on a big government, big media, big pharma feces list. And that's reason 6,246, 7, and 8 why you got to get the hell out of Dodge while you still can. Since you've got that plethora of cowardly doctors and big pharma kiss-asses. Speaking of getting out of Dodge, you know, I've got my February 2022 Expat Insider Seminar coming up in about 6 or 7 weeks now, as dated from when this show goes out on Friday, December 31st. And I gotta tell you, a couple of days ago, there was a bit of a scare. There was a rumor on the Guatemalan grapevine that the government, Guatemalan government that is, was planning on making it a requirement that foreigners flying into Guatemala would have to produce a vax card. That rumor started the day before Christmas and even showed up on at least one government website. And that was supposed to go into effect as of January 1st. Well, guess what? Within one day, there was such a backlash from the tourism and hospitality business and private sector in general that they canned the idea within one day. And that would have affected our seminar because a lot of people coming down have not been vaxxed and they don't want to be. In fact, some of them are coming down just to hook up with expat Eddie, who knows a guy who knows a guy. Anyway, that idiot bonehead idea was thankfully nipped in the bud. However, I do know quite a few European countries are requiring people to be vaxxed to enter now, too. Yes, it's true, the world has gone nuts. Even crazier, I'm sure you've seen that to take a cruise, you have to be fully vaxxed. So, all the cruises out there are fully vaxxed. Meanwhile, in breaking news just this week, a number of cruise ships are coming down with raging COVIDiot cases, adding more fuel to the fire that the vaxxers are just a big pharma money-making fraud. Anyway, when the rumor hit last week that Guatemala would only be admitting visitors who'd been vaxxed, though the rumor turned out false. Even so, on that very first day when me and my seminar staff got wind of it, we already had a hack planned. We figured if that was to happen, we'd simply have everyone fly into El Salvador's airport. Because we're visiting El Salvador anyway, you know, Bitcoin Beach and all that. We'd just start the seminar from there. just working it in reverse. Here's the thing. In the fine print of that supposed edict, that proposed vax requirement was only for people flying into the international airport in Guatemala City. And it didn't apply to people crossing into Guatemala through a land border. So the proposed hack I put together was that attendees fly into El Salvador's airport. We pick everyone up there. We commence with the Salvador portion of the seminar, then drive our buses through Guatemala's land border where you don't need a vax card. Then do the Guatemala portion of the seminar and drive back through to Salvador and fly out. That is those who are flying out and not staying permanently, because some of the people coming down to the seminar have made their plans to get out of Dodge permanently. They're never going back to the States, Canada, Europe, Japan, wherever. I say congratulations. Good for you. So that was the seminar Plan B hack, just in case. Gotta have a Plan B, you know. How's your Plan B coming? Anyway, not to worry. We're still going with Plan B. By the way, as far as the seminar, we're still looking for some people who want to come down and save almost $1,000 off the single fee by hooking up with a roommate, meaning sharing hotel rooms double occupancy with another attendee. By the way, same gender only, please. I'm talking about real science, assigned gender, XY chromosome stuff. Sorry, but the concept of gender fluidity has not yet arrived here in Latin America. Lag time, you know. What a relief. So anyway, if you're looking to come to the seminar and you want to have a roommate, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and put roommate in the subject title. Oh, and to get all the info and details on this seminar, just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link. By the way, some of the people who are coming down are killing two or three or four birds with one stone. They're doing the seminar, of course, but also doing other things like opening bank accounts, visiting our recommended dentists and physicians, checking out neighborhoods and places to rent. So if that's your plan, don't forget to add a few extra days at the beginning or end of the seminar to accomplish that and get a hold of Rita, our seminar logistics coordinator, and she'll set all that stuff up for you. She'll hold your hand through it. Speaking of real estate and rentals and stuff, you might find this interesting. The other day I was talking to Bitcoin Dan. Now, he's been living in a really, really nice gated, guarded community on the road to El Salvador. That's about 20 or 30 minutes outside of Guatemala City limits going south towards El Salvador, right off the Pan-American Highway, about 5 minutes off of it. That's a really nice area there. Coffee fields mixed with upscale neighborhoods, small towns, plantations, medium and upscale housing developments, plus a few first-world style shopping malls thrown in here and there, but nothing really ugly or gaudy. Anyway, I was talking to Bitcoin Dan, and he said he's moving to a different neighborhood. Now, previously, for some years, he'd been renting a 2,500-square-foot, really nice place, fantastic view, in a gated, guarded community. Each house has a nice front and backyard, lots of green, lots of foliage. Plus, this place has its own lush, plush, manicured park with a river running through it. Oh, and there's a couple of guards that ride around on bikes all day and night, just patrolling. And for all that, and for the past, I think, 7 or 8 years, Bitcoin Dan's been paying around $1,200 a month for that place. I told him he could probably get it for $1,000 or even less, but Dan's not into bargaining. In fact, lots of gringos and expats don't feel good about bargaining on rent prices because it's just not the thing to do up in the States. But anyway, I know in the burbs of Chicago, a place like that would go for $3,000 or $4,000 a month. Anyway, Dan's moving on up, and man, did he move on up. He just moved into one of the most exclusive areas in all of Guatemala. A very high-end, perfectly manicured, gated, guarded community, where every house is a mansion and everyone's got such a huge yard, some would qualify as standalone parks. And each house is at least a city block away from the next one. And of course, all the neighbors are rich, or appear to be, but, you know, in Latin America, you never know. Everybody, and I mean everybody, puts on the dog. Anyway, in his neighborhood, there's a mix of rich guys and a few scumbag politicians, you know, thieving, sociopathic congressmen and such. Are there any other kind? Disgusting, I know, but that is the way of the world. In fact, 3 or 4 years ago, in that very subdivision, I got invited to a party. One of those famous 15 años parties they throw for little girls when they're 15 years old. And man, they must have spent 30 or 40 grand on that party. It was like a wedding where they pulled out all the stops. 200 young kids dressed in designer clothes because all their parents had dough. With some of them chauffeured in by their bodyguards. The side streets were lined with massive SUVs and a couple of dozen sweaty bodyguards in their ill-fitting Kmart suits, just hanging with each other on the roadside, wishing they had access to that open bar. And the party was going on at two different places, under a huge tent and at the party pavilion in the center of that subdivision. So when Dan told me the name of his new subdivision, I thought, I know that place. And then he told me about a little bridge and a river in his backyard. And I remembered that from the party. I walked back there. So anyway, Dan said he's renting this house. It's a virtual mansion. It's 13,000 square feet, 10 or 12 bedrooms, a pool, its own pond, a river, gazebo, a yard so big it could be a private park. And all that for, get this, $2,500 a month. Talk about desperate sellers or desperate landlords in this case. Well, here's the story, and it's a convoluted one. Turns out the owner was a former executive for Blackwater, you know, Dick Cheney's firm, a gringo, I believe, married to a Latina. And for some reason, the guy got ousted or fell on hard times and had to rent the place out. And as it turns out, the last two renters that he had, they were both wealthy or supposedly wealthy Latinos, stiffed the guy for rent, and one of them trashed the place. So when Bitcoin Dan came along and the owner saw how much on the straight and narrow Dan was and what a nice, straight-up guy he is, he realized just in a few seconds that Dan's no partier, he doesn't drink or do drugs or hang with bad influences. It was just Dan and his girlfriend. So anyway, bottom line, without going into too much more detail, the gringo landlord, who'd been stiffed by two upscale Latin renters, offered Bitcoin Dan the deal of a lifetime, because that place in Chicago would go for 15, maybe 20 grand a month all day long. So again, you could trace that whole deal back to the gringo advantage again, because for better or for worse, the gringo owner, the gringo landlord, however sinister a Blackwater dude he happened to have been, he recognized that Latino renters, even supposedly upscale, high society renters, are no substitute for a solid gringo renter. It's a funny thing. The longer you live down here in Latin America, the more high-rolling Latino families you meet, the more you realize a large percentage of them don't pay their bills on time. They don't pay their help on time. They're virtual deadbeats. Though by all appearances, they look like they've got the world by the ass. It's a society whose people from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high consistently live beyond their means and are chronically in debt. Sound familiar? By the way, Bitcoin Dan's girlfriend's hobby is gardening, which was one of the main reasons he agreed to sign the deal in the first place. Oh, and by the way, Dan convinced the owner to accept Bitcoin, too. Hey, why not? After all, he is Bitcoin Dan. Yep, it's no longer considered to be much on the fringe to pay for things in crypto. In fact, if you do a search on the net, you can find lots of real estate agents worldwide who will take Bitcoin and other cryptos, too. You gotta love it. Cutting out the middleman and the banksters? No wonder they hate crypto so much. By the way, Bitcoin Dan will be at the Expat Insider Seminar, so you can meet him personally and hear his crypto talk. So anyway, Dan's story is just another example of those desperate sellers and property owners coming out of the woodwork. And yet another reason, and some of you have probably figured this out already, why you don't want to be a landlord in Latin America. You think it's tough to collect rents up in the States? Add to that the complications of the COVID crisis, where some people just don't pay at all and become virtual squatters? And there's really nothing you can do about it because the government says it's okay. And that's what it's like in the States. Now, just imagine being a landlord in Latin America trying to collect rents under those conditions. Add to the fact that Latin Americans are chronically broke and late payers. Even if Latinos are flush, they've got the money. They'll pay late because that's just the culture. In fact, I remember some years ago, expat Eddie sold a pickup truck to one of his workers. He gave him half the money down, I think it was $2,000, and he was supposed to pay the other $2,000 the following month. He had 30 days. Of course, he took possession of the truck right away. He was Eddie's worker. Eddie trusted him. Well, a month rolled by, 2 months, 3 months. Then finally, after 6 months, Eddie said, "Where's the dough?" Well, on month 7, he came up with it. Funny thing, though, Eddie said, the whole time the guy was delinquent. He saw the guy almost every day. He never apologized. He never felt bad. He had no shame. Even after months and months of not paying. And finally, when he paid up, he had a big expectant smile on his face as if Eddie was supposed to say to him, "Thanks for everything. Nice doing business with you. We'll do it again sometime." Again, no shame, no remorse. "No, I was a dick. Sorry about that, boss." Eddie said it looked like he actually expected a little pat on the back and a smile. By the way, I was talking to a Latin American bankster the other day. They're a bit different from banksters up in the States. They're enamored with the first world banking system and want nothing better than to get a job working for a transnational bank like Citibank, Bank of America, Deutsche Bank, Lloyds Bank. To them, that's making it in the finance world. You see, most bankers down here work at banks you've never heard of, strictly local Latin banks. Anyway, Latin bankers, they're like most Latin Americans who've been sort of lobotomized into thinking things out of the first world are the be-all and end-all. Well, with this COVID crap, we're sure seeing how that's turning out, right? Anyway, this Latin bankster told me, there's a huge push within their bank and all the Latin American banks, by the way, to get their clients signed up for car insurance and health insurance, which sounds natural because it's a huge untapped market. Not even 10% of Latin Americans have private health insurance or insurance on their cars or motorcycles. I said, why not? That'd be a good thing for society in general. The Latin world would be a better place if people had private health care insurance and car insurance. Then he told me everyone wants it and lots of people sign up for it. But he said a few years back there was a big push. Lots of people signed up for, he's talking about health insurance now. Unfortunately, he said more than half of the people within a year were delinquent on their payments and got cut off. He said, I can't tell you how many clients show up at hospitals and clinics with their insurance card only to find out they're not covered anymore because they missed two or three payments. He said, Latinos have misplaced priorities. That's why the bankster told me when a person does get car insurance or health insurance through the bank, and that's the way it's usually done, they actively discourage people from using the pay-as-you-go plan and instead push and give a hefty discount to people who sign up for monthly automatic credit card or savings account deductions. That way, the policy is always paid up and active and you're never in arrears. Even if you've got zero funds in your account, the bank will pay the overdraft. Yep, banks love overdrafts because overdraft charges are hefty and they'll kick in right away and the bank gets reimbursed for the extra charges and fees on your next deposit. Oh, and the bankster told me, and I guess this is true in the States too, overdrafts are a huge source of revenue for the banks. So much so, he said, that their quarterly earning statements pretty much depend on them. In fact, he said the bank could probably close its books on everything else except the overdraft department and still make a profit at the end of the year. Which says volumes about how Latin Americans handle their finances, or mishandle them. Though again, that sounds way too familiar, doesn't it? Enough said about that. Remember in last week's show, I was talking about how if you were going to go off the grid solar here, or even put up panels, or whatever you want to do solar-wise, here in Latin America, you don't have to notify any government agency at all, unless you're planning on feeding current back to the grid. Then you'll have to notify the power company, and they'll come out and check your system out to make sure it's compatible. And it's the right phase and the right wiring and all that. I mean, that's normal. But like I said, no matter how you feel about selling energy back to the grid, personally, I wouldn't sign up for it myself. Remember, in the past life, I was an engineer, and I'm against it. For a lot of reasons. You could go back to last week's show and listen to them if you like. And I mentioned on that show, if you're planning to do any kind of solar at all up in the States, you got to go through the permitting process. Lots of red tape, forms, interviews, and hoops to jump through. And as they say down under in Australia, there'll be lots of government busybodies poking up your arse. In fact, after that show last week, one Aussie listener, Bernard, who's gone off the grid solar himself, sent me a current 2021 PDF entitled Small-Scale Renewable Solar Energy Measures and Regulations for 2021. It's the Australian Homeowners Rules and Regs for doing solar. And get this, it's 31 pages long. And just loaded with asinine requirements. Like Aussie Bernard, who sent it to me, said, if you read that thing, if you could even get through it, there's 101 ways to fine you if you do an installation and they ever come out to inspect it. By the way, if you want to go into a permanent brain fog, I'll send you a copy of this. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. You'll find out in a hurry it's reason 6,456, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 12, why you really have to get the hell out of Dodge while you can. By the way, regarding solar, when I ordered from China directly some solar panels and an all-in-one lithium battery solar power system, in the packing list documentation, there was a one-page government document from the Guatemalan government for the solar panels and another page for the all-in-one lithium battery system. That was the only necessary government paperwork to get the stuff in the country. And of course, the customs brokers took care of all that as part of the shipping charges, which I think were around $600 complete. The stuff was heavy, so it came on a slow boat from China. It took about 3 weeks to a month in transit, but that was before COVID. So again, there were only 2 pages of government documentation to get a complete solar system from China to my place in Guatemala. That as opposed to Australia, where they've got a 31-page PDF document that you must follow or get fined. Now, I have to believe it's got to be the same in California. They've got the most asinine and redundant regulations in all the 50 states. So maybe one of you California listeners out there can fill us in. All right, moving on. You know, I'm not a really big fan about moving to Ecuador. It's a nice place to visit, but to me, it's kind of boring and too many gringos have piled in. So it's got that problem of gringo contamination, especially Cuenca. But I'll give kudos to a Latin country when it's actually doing something right, which is pretty rare. Hey, you live in the States, so you know what that's all about. For example, there's a bill working its way through the Ecuadorian Congress right now that will only allow one person on a motorcycle. Personally, I think it's a great idea, and you know why, of course. It's to prevent assaults perpetrated by two riders on a motorcycle, which is one of the most common ways to rob people throughout Latin America. You may have heard me mention this maybe 6 months ago. It happened to my girlfriend while at a gas station filling up a motorcycle with two people on it, pulled right between her and the pump. That is before the guy walked over to pump the gas. And of course, when you pull into a gas station, you roll your window down. So a motorcycle pulled in between the car and the pumps, saw her window was down. They knew it would be. The guy behind the driver, the passenger, stuck his hand in and stole her phone. They tried to scoop up her purse too, but they didn't get that. She fought them as they pulled on the strap, but they weren't successful. Another way they'll rob you is two on a motorcycle will pull up to a really busy intersection, but not right up to the front row. They'll wait till the light turns red and the cars start piling up. Look for a car with a driver's side window down. Better yet, look for a woman with a driver's side window down because they know she'll be screwing around with her phone and will put up less resistance. They'll worm their way up, stick a hand in, steal a phone, and run the red light, knowing full well the person they robbed is backed up in traffic and will never be able to lurch forward until the light turns green again. By then, the crooks are a couple of blocks ahead and out of sight. Oh, and here's another way motorcycles rob you. People who are depositing or withdrawing money from banks or especially ATM machines have been victims of this very same method of robbery, usually done by three people, two on a bike and one guy who's a lookout. The lookout's maybe 20 or 30 feet from the ATM. He appears to be occupied on a phone, laughing and maybe drinking a Coke. He's really seeing if you're pulling out a big wad of cash or not. Then he signals his two buddies on the bike to follow you. Another scam is one person goes in a bank and identifies people withdrawing money. The scout texts his buddies outside on the motorcycle, and they follow the guy. If he goes to a car, they follow his car, and when he gets out, at his house or a mall or whatever. As soon as he or she opens the door, they take him by surprise. So again, it's good to know that more than half the robberies that take place in Latin America are two guys on a motorcycle. So be on the lookout. And Ecuador wants to change the rules. Now, of course, that would tend to screw up date night. Or the cases where riding motorcycles is a family affair. I've seen up to five people on a bike. Actually, six one time. Five humans and a dog, or I should say five subhumans and a dog. Don't believe it? Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the photo I took of them. So then you might ask, will Ecuador's one person on a bike measure pass? Well, I kind of doubt it for one reason. Every Latin American country has cops patrolling on motorcycles in twos. So if it were to pass, they'd be riding illegally too. Oh, by the way, I've got a picture of three cops on a motorcycle. Send me an email, expatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you that one too.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Latin America.